Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
It's not one of those shows where I drone on and monotone and low energy and quiet. No one has ever used those words to describe me. Except in those occasions where something's horribly wrong, like I'm sick or I've worn out or I've been awake for 36 hours. Those are the only times that people ever say those types of things about me. So this is not the show if you're really looking for a good night's sleep without any interruptions or crazy dreams or just the injections of noise. However, I do hear from people all the time who say that they listen while they're sleeping. They have insomnia. Might I suggest that you have insomnia because you're listening to the show? But I am glad that you're so faithful. Thank you. And happy almost Friday. I'll be a little quieter with it. Man, what a night in sports. And that's something I could say about many of the last few shows, the last few evenings that we've had. It's nutso in October. You know me. I'm like a broken record this month. I will say that I've gotten to the point. It only took 10 months. Married 10 months ago today. It only took 10 months for my husband to decide that he was tired of hearing sports and watching sports. And I agree with him, actually. I'm kind of tired of it, too. But that is the job. It's the second I wake up in the afternoon, boom, the sports are already on until I come to work. And then, yeah, the couple of hours of peace in the morning before I fall asleep, I get to read a book that has nothing to do with sports. Yeah, they require all of you in October. And I keep promising him the rest of the fall and the winter will not be like this. I'm not sure he believes me right now, but yeah, it's definitely taking a toll on the Hubs, all the constant sports in October. So we need to get to the final series of the baseball season and then get that fall classic over with. Let's go. Chop, chop. So I used to, in a former life, root for game sevens. Now I'm just rooting for series to be sweeps. No, I'm not. I'm just kidding. That would be over the top. I do still love the drama, and I do still appreciate the crazy stories and moments, unforgettable moments that we get in October. And boy, did we have several twists and turns like a Broadway show on the shores of Lake Erie. That was amazing. So the first game of these championship series that have gone into extra innings. And can I just state for the record, I am so grateful, so happy, so thrilled that there is None of that gimmicky automatic runner on second base in extra innings during the postseason, because that stinks. And judging by the response I got online, I think many of you feel the exact same way. That is so gimmicky, I can't stand it. I'm really thankful that they had the sense in the baseball league offices and, of course, the Major League Baseball Players Association to not include that as a feature in the playoffs. So thankfully, we didn't have to deal with that. But Guardians and Yankees, they go not just into extra innings, but the drama that's unfolds in the final few innings of this game three was terrific. Far more interesting than what was happening in New Orleans. You don't hear me say that very often. Far more interesting than what was happening on the football field. And I can't imagine that the Amazon Prime ratings were high or the viewership numbers were high for Thursday's game. Other than Sean Payton returning to New Orleans, other than the occasional glimpse of Drew Brees. So they're both on the sidelines. And other than seeing some of the young players for Denver, including their rookie quarterback, Bo Nix, maybe you tune in for a little while. But I had the game on my laptop. I was going back and forth at this point between the two baseball games because they were straddled. They overlapped. And the extra innings meant that I couldn't tune away from the Yankees Guardians for very long, but then would have to go to the other channel and rewind to get, for instance, I missed the first Ohtani home run. It was a leadoff home run in game four because I was watching the other baseball game. So thank goodness for the DVR. Thank goodness that I could watch football on my laptop. Thank goodness that it's almost Friday because my brain is stuffed full. Lots of my musings, though, in the moments in which they're playing out, you can find on my Twix at ALOL Radio. And then also our show account. That's where our polls originate from. And we will have the After Hours Game of the Week poll coming up in the next few minutes or so, I guess. Producer Pete and I have to figure it out. But we're musing over it. We're chewing and stewing, if you will. And also, while we're talking football, because we will get to the start of week seven between the Saints and the Broncos, which was about as lopsided can be. It was obviously a tumultuous first 6 weeks of the season for the Raiders. Not only some really tough losses, but also a QB switch, and now the departure of their best receiver, plus, oh, who by the way stays in the same conference, plus Tom Brady is now a part owner. So you want to talk about a wild ride and a roller coaster of emotions? Well, that's definitely what's been happening with the Raiders. We need to get to bottom of it, and so our friend and SI insider Hondo Carpenter will join us for the first time this season. We're looking forward to his insight and his intel. So that will happen next hour from Las Vegas. He's got a podcast that he records frequently, so he's got a lot he's working on. Glad that he will be able to join us. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. I heard from a bunch of Guardians fans who threatened that they were going to call. And I'm joking about the threatened. Of course, I'm always happy to hear from Cleveland fans. And I can't help but be happy when Cleveland fans are happy because, let's be fair, there's not been a ton of moments that they can look back at and hang on to. Now, they've got the 16 NBA Finals in which the LeBron-led Cavaliers rallied past the Warriors. They'll always have that NBA title in such dramatic fashion. But as many of you know, Cleveland sports can be the butt of the jokes or the punchline because of the Browns and everything that's happened with them. And now this season being so woefully below expectations for a lot of reasons, trading away Amari Cooper, getting stuck with Deshaun Watson still, a defense that's not as good, a Myles Garrett who's hobbled. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it's just a mess and depressing. So what I was asking, not asking, but when I put a post up on our Facebook page with the conversation about the Cowboys. Remember, we had Babe Laufenberg, former Cowboy and radio analyst, with us earlier in the week. And I was kind of lamenting all the things that are wrong with the Cowboys as we talked to Babe. And some listener from Cleveland wrote in, it could be worse. You could be a Browns fan. Or the situation with the Browns is far worse. Something along those lines. So you've got that for Cleveland. Yes, the Cavaliers are starting their season. Okay, there's that. And the Guardians, they won the AL Central going away. They needed a 5-game set against the Tigers to get into this ALCS against the Yankees, but facing a major uphill climb because of those first two games. A lot of people burying the Guardians already, but man, they fight back tooth and nail, and they've had some really special moments already in this postseason. Goodness. So lots of big flies coming from David Fry, and we'll get to that straight ahead. So I'm happy for you, Cleveland, because Progressive Field is bonkers. And I know, judging by many of you who've said you're going to call and who weigh in, very passionate about your teams, that this is another moment that you can hang on to in this October 2024. So that you've got our phone number at A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page as well. So we've gotten to the point now where these games, they're tense. They're intense. Even if these are long series, quote unquote, man, the games themselves feel like mini movies or, yeah, as I say, Broadway shows, because they're playing out live in front of us, in front of ginormous audiences and loud, raucous crowds. So the Guardians were able to get their series back into Cleveland. So that was huge. And we'll talk about that one following the break. The one that just finished up a couple hours ago, Dodgers and Mets at Citi Field. And yeah, like I said, I was busy watching extra innings with Guardians and Yankees and missed the first batter of Mets-Dodgers.
The 1-0 pitch. Ohtani swings, and it's a missile to right field. Marte will turn and watch this one fly. Shohei Ohtani, a leadoff home run, a laser beam to right field, and it's 1-0 Dodgers right off the hop in game four.
Well, look at that. Shohei Ohtani finally has a hit with no one on base. Yeah, he goes 1-for-3 in this game, but he also walks 3 times. You can tell the Mets pitching, they're kind of creeping around the edges, and he's pretty patient with his bat. And so he walks 3 times, he gets on base, he scores 4 runs. So that should tell you how effective he is once he gets on base. And he's a table setter there at that DH in the leadoff spot. And behind him, Mookie Betts is all the way back, as in all the way back. Remember, Betts himself started, what was it, 0-for-17 in these playoffs, I believe. And lots of talk about, where's Mookie? What's going on with Mookie? Well, he started to nibble, and now we're starting to see the full force of Mookie. And there was no Freddie Freeman in this game. He was a late scratch, and so they're missing Freeman, but needing the production behind him. And, oh, yeah, there's this guy named Tommy Edman, who, like Kike Hernandez, seems to relish October.
2-0. Tommy swings, takes it to left center field. That ball is going to get down in between Nimmo and Bader. Ohtani scores. Mookie's held up at third. It's an RBI double for Tommy Edman. And it's 2-1 Dodgers.
Edman is hitting .324 in these playoffs and now has 8 RBI for the Dodgers. And again, we're not talking about a major superstar similar to Kike Hernandez, who had another 2 hits in this game. Not talking about the most expensive bats in the lineup. Certainly not talking about the high-profile guys who people show up to the ballpark to see, other than their families, which is great. But those two guys at shortstop and third base, so left side of the infield, they're a combo there, and they are continuing with the bats to give that production in the heart of the order. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So yeah, you get production from Edman and Hernandez, but really the biggest bat in this game was Mookie Betts. And here's the deal. While Mookie has some power, and while these other guys do have power, it's not like the home run is their biggest weapon on this night. They do get a huge home run from Mookie later in the game, but what has been such an issue for the Mets is their pitching continues to issue free passes to the Dodgers. Another nine walks in this game for the Dodgers lineup. And with the number of pitches that these guys are throwing, starting with Jose Quintana, and the way the Dodgers are working the counts and working the at-bats, it's obviously causing these guys to have to throw a lot more pitches. And so, for instance, Quintana, the starter, he's out in the fourth inning, but he's thrown 83 pitches by that point. Every single pitcher in this game issued at least one walk, but Quintana had four, and the Dodgers are taking advantage. Once they've got runners on base, in this game particularly, but we've seen it already in the series, once they get guys on base, they can be really deadly with the bats. 6 for 15 with runners in scoring position. And actually, they left a dozen guys on base as well, so they had a lot more opportunities. But this was the game in which there were no more questions about Mookie Betts.
Mookie's 1 for 2 with a base hit and run score. Make it 2 for 3. Takes one to left field. This ball's going to get all the way to the wall. Nimmo with his bad foot just got it. Here comes Ohtani scoring from first. Mookie Betts delivers a 2-run double. Make it 5-2 Dodgers. Now Maton's 2-2. Bet swings, hits a high fly ball left field, going back Nimmo on the track, at the wall, it is out of here! Mookie Betts, watch that one fly from the batter's box, admiring a 2-run blast. Second time tonight, the Mets go to the bullpen for Mookie, and he makes them pay. Mookie with his third hit of the night, third home run of the postseason. And it's now 7-2 Dodgers.
4 for 6 in this game with 4 RBI. He scores 3 runs. And this is behind Shohei Ohtani, who has been almost automatic with guys in scoring position. So the two of them at the top of the lineup, making up for the fact that Freeman's been in and out of that lineup.
Felt pretty good. You know, it's good to feel good. It's good to help the team. And pitching did amazing. You know, keeping them off the board, really. So, it was fun.
We're playing our game right now. We're playing Dodger baseball. That's something that we do extremely well during the regular season, and we're staying within ourselves. We're not trying to do too much at the plate. We're not trying to chase things around. We're staying within the zone, and it's getting good results for us.
Max Muncy talking about Dodgers baseball, the performance of the offense there on MLB Network. So here are the Dodgers. And again, I've been blown away by their pitching. They are just one win away from the World Series.
It feels good. I think that we've done a good job putting ourselves in this position. I sort of like the us against the world attitude that our guys have sort of taken on. I think that's kind of ironic, you know, with the Dodgers. But I like that.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Dave Roberts makes this point that the Dodgers are more underdogs, and whether it's people rooting against them just because they're Dodgers, similar to the Yankees, like we talked about on last night's show, or whether it's because their major weakness, their fatal flaw, has been their pitching all season long, and yet their pitching is outperforming expectations. I mean, that to me is incredible. What we've seen from Dave Roberts, his pitching staff, and of course the guys they put out there. And now it looks as though, now Dave Roberts had indicated that he wanted to wait and see how Game 4 went at Citi Field, but it looks as though the Dodgers may throw Jack Flaherty in Game 5. I remember he had a 7 scoreless the last time that he was out there on the mound. So we'll see. Like right now, it does look as though Flaherty is the starter that's listed for Game 5 that begins, actually the earlier game on Friday at 5:08 Eastern time. So 5:08 New York time, but 2:08 Dodgers time. David Peterson will go for the Mets. And Carlos Mendoza, I just as a side note, appreciate how honest he is. He's not one of those jaded media managers who doesn't give you any information. Nah, he's really open about what's happening with his team, and he's pointing to the Dodgers and how they're forcing his starters to work so hard and the fact that they're having to throw so many pitches.
They forced Quintana to come in the strike zone, and when he did, they made him pay. Our starters are one of the reasons we're here, and we haven't got length out of them. They got them, and here we are now.
The one word I can think of the 2024 Mets, other than grimace, is resiliency. Like, I mean, that's just who we are. Like, we have fun, we enjoy the moment, but at the end of the day, like, we're a resilient bunch, and we respond in a very positive way.
Pete Alonso and the playoff pumpkin, they maybe have some more magic, some more miracles. These Mets have been down and out multiple times. They've been on life support multiple times this season, even these playoffs, and they do manage to come back. And so as I look ahead to game five, I would expect that with their potentially final game at Citi Field, unless they can forcibly come back against the Dodgers and get to the World Series themselves. So Pete's right, they're not out yet, but it's been tough for them when it comes to their pitchers. We hear what Mendoza had to say, but how about the fact that they're 0-for-10 with runners in scoring position, and they also had a dozen men left on base. So they did get some traffic against Yamamoto, just couldn't come up with the big hit. They had one hit early in which bases were loaded for Yamamoto, and they have a ball that goes to shortstop, I believe, and it's a double play ball. But who was it, Pete, that beat the ball down the line?
Nimmo.
Even with his foot, right? So he's hobbling, but Brandon Nimmo beats that ball down the line, and we're talking bang, bang. They had to go to replay to confirm that Nimmo was safe. So that scores a run because the double play wasn't converted by the Dodgers. But otherwise, Yamamoto was able to get out of trouble. He ends up with a line that... I would think early in the game, I expected a little more offense from the Mets, or at least runs across, but he allows just two runs on the four hits. He strikes out eight. He's gone into the fifth inning, but that bullpen for the Dodgers has been terrific. And so now the Mets are on the cusp, and we need to see them fight back. The Guardians did exactly that. They could take a page from Cleveland's book. Man, wait until you hear the dramatic moments through the eyes of Tom Hamilton, the terrific play-by-play announcer for the Guardians Radio Network. Game three between the Yankees and Guardians, it was masterful. It was a masterpiece if you're looking for some type of a perfect drama. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, whether it's online at ALawRadio. Radio or our Facebook page. We'd love to connect with you. Happy Almost Friday on the Infinity Sports Network.
Now the 3-1. Manzardo with a drive to deep right. Away, back, and gone. Kyle Manzardo. What a joyous jaunt around. Now the payoff pitch. Swung and grounded up the middle. Base hit. RBI single to center. Jimenez comes through. With a drawn in infield, he shot it right back up the middle. And Cleveland's got itself a lead of 3-1.
This, whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
How many times did it feel like either the Guardians or the Yankees had won this game, quote unquote, meaning it was the final nail in the coffin? And that's the beauty of October, is until you are out of strikes and out of the inning and in the clubhouse, it's never over. It's never over until, well, let's not fat shame the lady, but it's never over until you hear the singing in the stadium. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, the great Tom Hamilton, and he was just warming up on the Guardians Radio Network. All right, so we fast forward after the Guardians take a 3-1 lead in the bottom of the sixth. Yankees had been pushing. They'd been pressing. Once again, facing Emmanuel Clase, best closer in the game this season.
And the 1-2 swung on and drilled to right field. That ball is going to be gone. It was a line drive, and it went over the right field fence. It's a Judgian blast. The Yankee dugout goes nuts. They're all on the field. A two-run home run to tie the game the opposite way. The Judgian blast. And all rise. There comes the Judge. 1-2. Swung on and hit in the air to center field and deep. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Stanton and Judge have hit home runs, a back-to-back and a belly-to-belly. And the Yankees take the lead. Giancarlo, non si può stopparlo. He homers, and he and Judge hit him back-to-back. And the Yankees now take a 4-3 lead.
Oh, it's abrupt there. That's John Sterling on the Yankees radio network. So, yes, off Emmanuel Clase, which in and of itself is stunning. Judge first homers, and Soto was already on base, and so it's a two-run blast that ties the game, and that's followed by Giancarlo Stanton. And, yeah, all of a sudden, all the talk about Ohtani and Judge not being able to produce in October has gone by the wayside. Second home run in two games for Aaron Judge in this ALCS, third for Giancarlo Stanton in these playoffs. And at that point, it must have felt like a funeral inside the stadium. Progressive Field, the looks on the faces that you could see on TV, just the way that the mood and the atmosphere and the sound all changed so drastically. And they had done that with two outs, right? And each one of them had two strikes. So that's what I mean. Until you are out, it's like a cat with nine lives. Until you are out of lives, there is still hope, which we found out bottom of the ninth inning on the shores of Lake Erie.
John Kenzie Noel's last home run came against Pittsburgh August 30th. No time like the present. 5-3 Yankees, runner at second, two down, ninth inning, and the 1-0 pitch. Swung out and hammered, high, deep to left, away out of here! Bedlam in Cleveland!
Seriously, is Tom Hamilton not the best? He's so good. He's so good. And so that's how the Guardians answered. And so there's another twist, right? Yankees think they haven't won, or at least they've done what they needed to do, especially off the best closer in the game, Emmanuel Clase, who only lasted 15 pitches. They capture the lead with those two home runs, which, by the way, neither one was a mammoth moonshot, say, like Shohei Ohtani's game, his one that went high up in the air and came down 410 feet at Citi Field the night before, the one that was like this no doubter, nor were their home runs like the no doubter of Noel. And by the way, I love all the Christmas references, really funny, as I get so much traffic back from Guardians fans. And so for this rookie, and you hear Tom Hamilton say, hasn't had a home run since August 30th, to come through in such a massive spot. I mean, I'm so happy for him. Can you imagine the emotions that were surging through him? And his teammates were, of course, over the moon. Well, that sent us into extra innings. And, yeah, anything you can do, I can do better. But, you know, David Fry's already got one of these moments.
Cleveland down two games to none. 5-5 in the 10th. Holmes is ready. Here it comes. Swung on, hit high, and deep to left. There she goes! How about that? A walk-off, two with a 7-5 10th inning win. And David Fry, who saved the season in game 4 with a pinch hit 2-run home run late in the game off the Tigers, has won it here tonight with a 2-out, 2-strike, 2-run home run to left.
We're going to need to fade those out because it sounds pretty abrupt. I'm listening along with Tom Hamilton and then, oh.
Left.
Well, how about Stephen Vogt pushing all the right buttons? Remember, he had David Fry pinch hit for his home run against the Tigers. Then he sends, and this is just tonight for a moment that will stand out. Then he sends his 23-year-old rookie to pinch hit, Junkensky Noel. And what does he do? But he blasts a ball out of the park. For that young man who I think had just a handful of home runs this year, 12, 13, something like that, for him to produce in that moment, and I love what he had to say through an interpreter, that Vogt didn't say anything to him specifically, didn't give him a pep talk, just said, when I get my name called, it's because they believe in me and they trust me. And boy, does he come through long enough to extend the game so that David Fry can go big fly yet again. Man, that was phenomenal. Just so much fun to watch the various moments unfold and to have these jaw droppers again and again in this game 3 between the Yankees and the Guardians. And yeah, everybody after the game, both winning side and losing side, are saying the same thing. That was incredible.
I don't know if it gets much better than that. Two of the best closers in the game right now. You know, you get to them. That doesn't happen hardly ever. And I think there's one person that could hit that pitch off Emmanuel Clase out of the yard, and he did. And as a baseball fan, it was really cool. As the opposing manager, it was not. but just what a fun baseball game for two really good teams.
I would just say that's a baseball game right there. You know, it's, like I said, I wish we were on the other end of it, but. You know, just back and forth. Guys having great at-bats when they needed to. Pitchers coming up in some big spots. And like I said, now we focus on game 4.
Yeah, so Aaron Judge, the one who was able to get to Emmanuel Clase first, and Stephen Vogt references him, and then Judge saying the same thing. That was a baseball game. That was just a baseball game. And yeah, Aaron Boone, he was in the same situation, right, where he's watching this unfold. He's thinking that they have the win, or at least they have the lead after kind of watching the game play out in a pretty typical fashion for Cleveland. You score a couple of runs, you take the lead, and then you hand off to your bullpen, which has been the best in baseball this year. So same thing with Aaron Boone. He's kind of talking about how he reacted after the back-to-back home runs in the 8th, only to then see everything flip on its head again.
You get in the emotion, like I think I threw a right fist pump, like, you know, fired up. But no, you're right in the game, and it's like, okay, what's the, you know, you kind of stand with what's next. But you certainly feel the energy of a couple shots like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy there. Complete mayhem on the shores of Lake Erie. I just dig this team and its ability to rally, but also baseball in October. It's different. It's just different. You may think baseball is boring during the regular season. You may think that the games, there's too many of them. They don't take too long anymore. Sometimes I feel like I'm not getting my money's worth if the game's only 2 hours and 10 minutes. But you may think there's not enough action. The games can't hold a candle to football or to basketball. But you watch baseball in October, and it is captivating. It's electric. And we've been treated to quite the show so far this month. Now there's another doubleheader coming up on Friday. Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to listen on the radio while I'm doing yard work because a girl's got to get outside at some point this week, okay? A girl's got to get some sunshine and some vitamin D. I've been stuck inside with my TV all week long. TV, computer. Oh, my brain on sports. Remember those old commercials, Pete, when we were kids? The frying pan Well, you get the egg, right? And this is your brain. And then they crack the egg and they fry the egg in the pan. And this is your brain on drugs. Okay, that's me right now. My brain is runny and is sunny side up on sports.
Mine too. I sometimes stare at the TV just with a gaze.
All right, so coming up, we're going to pivot to football because there was actually a game kicked off week number 7. Trust me, it wasn't nearly as exciting as the baseball, but, you know, we do our NFL thing around here. Pretty soon, we'll have the After Hours Game of the Week poll. Glad to connect with you at A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Let's lead off in New York. Game 4 of the National League Championship Series.
Now Maton's 2-2. Bet swings. Hits a high fly ball left field. Going back, Nimmo. On the track. At the wall. It is out of here! Mookie Betts, watch that one fly from the batter's box. Admiring a two-run blast. Second time tonight. The Mets go to the bullpen for Mookie. And he makes them pay.
Steven Elson on Dodgers Radio. Dodgers beat the Mets 10-2. They go up 3-1. Mookie Betts drove in 4 runs on the night. Game 5 Friday, 5:08 p.m. Eastern Time in New York. Now to Cleveland. Game 3 of the ALCS. Yankees were 1 out away from a 3-0 series lead. The Guardians had pinch hitter John Kensie Noel at the plate.
5-3 Yankees. Runner at second. 2 down, 9th inning, and the 1-0 pitch. Swung out and hammered, high, deep to left, away, out of here!
A game-tying two-run homer, Tom Hamilton on Guardians Radio. Then in the bottom of the 10th, David Fry with a walk-off two-run homer, and the Guardians win 7-5, cutting the Yankees' lead in the series to 2-1, game 4 Friday night in Cleveland, 8:08 p.m. Eastern Time. Now the NFL, Thursday Night Football, the Broncos over the Saints, 33-10. Javonte Williams rushing 14 times for 88 yards. And 2 touchdowns. College basketball, Virginia men's head coach Tony Bennett will announce his immediate retirement on Friday, not believed to be a health-related retirement. NHL, the Kraken over the Flyers 6-4, Blackhawks 4, Sharks 2. The Oilers double up the Predators 4-2. In overtime, it was the Blues over the Islanders 1-0. The Rangers beat the Red Wings 5-2. Artemi Panarin with a hat trick in that game. Blue Jackets over the Sabres 6-4. The Capitals beat the Stars 3-2. In overtime, Canucks 3, Panthers 2. Lightning over the Golden Knights 4-3. Kings 4, Canadiens 1. Devils beat the Senators 3-1. I'm Peter Schwartz.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
Is in the shotgun. Javonte to his right, to his left. He hands off Javonte to the 5, and he walks into the end zone with a Denver touchdown. Untouched. And Javonte knew it was a touchdown when he got to the 5-yard line. He just coasted into the end zone. It was 7:30 left in the first half. It's now Denver 12, New Orleans nothing. First and goal, Denver at the 5. Javonte, the only back behind Bo Nix, brings Franklin in motion right to left. Hands it off to Javonte off right guard. Javonte squares and leans to the goal line, and he's got a Denver touchdown. Javonte Williams from 5 yards out, his second rushing touchdown of the night, first 2 of the season. And with 5:53 left in the third quarter, the Broncos ahead of the Saints 25-3.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
I wouldn't say that's all you need to know about the Broncos' performance in New Orleans, but I would say it was that lopsided most of the time. The Broncos rushed for 225 yards against a depleted Saints defense. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Dave Logan with the calls on the Broncos radio network. Javonte Williams ends up with 88 yards and a couple of touchdowns, and so he was spearheading the charge. But Bo Nix had a couple of long runs, including a 32-yarder. I think it was late in the first half to set up a touchdown for the Broncos. And they were also able to get to Spencer Rattler. Multiple times he was under siege. The Broncos recorded 11 hits on him, but were also able to bring him down a bunch.
Rattler takes a shotgun snap. He'll be hit and sacked. And that is Zach Allen. Zach Allen with his fourth and a half sack of the season already. And that will force the Saints to punt after the sack and loss of seven.
It was a tough game for the Saints. They're already without Rashid Shaheed. Now we find out it's for the rest of the season following an MCL surgery. They lost a defensive player during the game. It looked as though he maybe had a torn ACL, potentially some damage to his leg as well in terms of a bone, possibly a broken bone. So they are hemorrhaging players, and this is, it's tough to watch. I've seen some of the online, you'll see pictures or screenshots of the list of players that they do not have available right now that are on the injured list, and it's a long, long list. And so for Dennis Allen, it's kind of hard to evaluate the team at all. He says, you know, it's been disappointing. Injuries play a part. We've got to figure out how to play through it. But now you've got a rookie quarterback who was never supposed to be on the field this quickly. And you've got a team that just at this point can't compete or can't match up talent-wise other than, of course, an Alvin Kamara. But when he's really the only guy who is posing a major threat, well, then it becomes much easier or more simply a defensive game plan when you know he's the guy that you have to limit. So it's a tough stretch right now for the Saints, hoping that they can get somewhat healthy, but they've lost a lot of pieces. The big storyline coming out of Thursday Night Football is the fact that Sean Payton was back in the place where he won multiple division titles. He was the coach of Drew Brees. They won a Super Bowl, obviously went through Hurricane Katrina, and had a strong relationship, not just with the fans, but with the city itself. And his team gave him the game ball after this win back at the Superdome.
There were a lot of, you know, moments here, and you get a chance to see old players that are, you know, that are here, and then to be with this team and this ownership group, it's the reason you miss it. You know, the 1 year out, and you miss relationships, and you miss making memories. It's like I told him a couple weeks ago, Sertan's interception, you know, right in front of our bench. There'll be a day when I don't remember his name, and, you know, I'm having applesauce out of a straw, but I'll remember that play. And so that part of it, being around young people and having a chance to be part of their journey and coach them is a pretty good job, and I'm thankful for it. So, it was kind of emotional.
Saints mean a lot to him. He was there for a while, had amazing success, and it's tough to go back to a place that, you know, you called home for that long, and, you know, you fought for, and now, you know, you're playing against. So it was special. It was a great moment. Happy for him.
Bo Nix continues to be a roller coaster ride. As I tell you, rookies giveth and they taketh away. But certainly to see Sean Payton get a victory there, but also get back to New Orleans and be celebrated by the fans. They have a special connection. They'll always have a special connection. I actually really like what he had to say pregame about going through that experience, the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, and being the team that helped to lead the city back to a place where it had some hope.
We would fly home from regular season games. There'd be 1,000 people at the airport. Just like none of us could have ever envisioned that. So there was a uniqueness to it. They've always been passionate, but I think a lot of it had to do with the year prior and how difficult it was.
Yeah, good to hear from Sean Payton this week and hear the emotion. I think that it's been one of those kind of year and a half in which, going into now his second season, which he's been buried in trying to build there in Denver. He's had to make some tough decisions. The way that they handled the Russell Wilson departure from Denver, think what you want about Russ on the field, but he was done dirty by that organization, and Sean Payton was the face of that. And I think that has maybe caused some people to get a sour taste when it comes to Payton. But to hear him talk about his time in New Orleans and reflect on the relationships and to remember what he and the Saints meant to the city of New Orleans and the fans as they were returning, as they were getting back to football, and of course, as they won the Super Bowl. It's unforgettable experience and an unforgettable relationship that's cemented in that adversity between the city and the team, and Sean Payton's a part of that. All right, we're going to talk Raiders mess next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.